Trinidad Monterin, and Medina pummeled Maestas and left him choking on his own blood in a Santa Fe La Quinta inn.
Nobody can prepare you for seeing somebody that you love so dearly in the condition that we found my son.
The young, thin, dark gentleman of Ickersby, eyed constantly and wanted, would have gone, but Gabriel waiting, turned in together. Not a word said till, wait, I'll untie it, and then, grand. First time after so many years and so deep mutual longing.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Same-gender couples gain support in Ireland, Colombia, and Taiwan. Brutal young bashers test New Mexico's hate crimes laws. And Black Diaries from a notorious night's Devil's Paradise. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Lucia Chappell.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 8, 2006. Government officials in several countries have been discussing legal recognition of same-gender couples. Opening new offices in Dublin this week of Ireland's Gay and Lesbian Equality Network, Prime Minister Bertie Ahern pledged to pass civil partnership legislation for gay and lesbian couples similar to the laws that came into effect in the UK in December. Our sexual orientation is not an incidental attribute. It is an essential part of who and what we are, Ahern told the opening day audience. Sexual orientation cannot and must not be the basis of a second-class citizenship, he said. But Ahern acknowledged that it might be more difficult to legalize same-gender unions in Ireland than it was in the United Kingdom, which includes neighboring Northern Ireland. Unlike the UK, the predominantly Roman Catholic Republic of Ireland's constitution has a clause requiring protection of the institution of marriage. Ahern said that a government-appointed group of experts would recommend several possible options in a report expected near the end of the year.
Also speaking out in support of same-gender couples is President Alvaro Uribe of Colombia, although in a somewhat limited way. During a meeting with college students in late March, Uribe was asked about his government's views on gay and lesbian couples' rights. According to a report in El Tiempo, he responded, "I will be completely sincere. First topic, marriage, no. Second topic, adoption, no. Inheritance rights, yes. Social Security, yes." Uribe's administration then introduced a measure in Parliament that would grant spousal rights to same-gender couples in the areas of inheritance, division of property, health care, and pensions. The legislation could face an uphill battle, however. A recent Gallup poll found that 77% of Colombians oppose legal recognition of same-gender unions.
Taiwan's Interior Minister Li Yiyang has announced that gays and lesbians should be able to seek protections under the island's domestic violence prevention law, the Taipei Times reported. Li said that gay and lesbian couples who live together should be included under the category family members, although the current law doesn't explicitly say that. The determination was made public as legislators reviewed the law in a Judiciary Committee meeting in late March. Legislator Kuo Lin-young said gays and lesbians have been derided, persecuted, and constrained in the past, but now they have begun to speak out and must now be equally protected by the law. Lawmaker Huang Su-ying noted that the concept of family traditionally referred to heterosexual couples and called the decision made at the review session a breakthrough for gay rights.
Canada's new Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper said this week that he'll keep his campaign promise to hold a free vote in Parliament on whether to reopen the issue of legal same-gender marriage. But government sources say that won't happen before the House of Commons breaks for summer vacation. Marriage equality advocates condemned the apparent foot-dragging. "We don't want this issue hanging over our heads," complained Lori Aaron of Canadians for Equal Marriage. "Parliament has better things to do than roll back the clock on equality," he said.
The Netherlands is marking the fifth anniversary of the modern world's first legal marriages for same-gender couples, which began a few minutes after midnight on April 1st, 2001.
We're in the city council chamber of the city of Amsterdam waiting for the four happy couples to come upstairs. And here comes Mayor Joop Cohen. the mayor of Amsterdam, who is officiating tonight, the former minister of justice who did so much to push this bill through both houses of parliament. And here they come. Here comes Geert Kasteel and Dolph Paska, and followed by Helene Fazen and Annemarie Toos, Tom Jansen and Louis Rochmans, and finally Peter Wittebrod-Lemke and Frank Wittebrod. And they're taking their seats, and Mayor Cohen is stepping up to the microphone. This is the first legal civil marriage between two men or two women, and that is unique in the world. The opening of civil marriage is a milestone in the history of lesbian and gay emancipation.
That was correspondent Mindy Ron reporting for This Way Out 5 years ago. About 2,400 same-gender couples married in the Netherlands during that first year. Those numbers have reportedly stabilized at around 1,200 each year since.
But Swaziland's Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs, Prince David Dlamini, has ruled out same-gender marriages in his country. The Constitution reflects the custom, culture, as well as the religious tendencies of our people, he said. In a nod to Namibia, Zimbabwe, Uganda, and some others on the continent, he added, Swaziland is not about to endorse human sexuality at a time when a number of African countries are making specific legal provisions banning such a practice.
Another newspaper publisher has been jailed in Cameroon for printing lists of public figures and celebrities alleged to be gay. Nouvelle Afrique publisher Biloa Ayisi was sent to prison for a year for trying to out a prominent doctor and the government minister for parliamentary affairs. Ayisi also was fined 4 million CFA francs, or about $7,300. He plans to appeal the defamation conviction. The editor of L'Anecdote was jailed for 4 months and fined the equivalent of about $1,800 in early March for publishing the same government minister's name on a long list of alleged homosexuals.
Brokeback Mountain continues to make news around the world. The new DVD release of the groundbreaking Oscar winner is selling briskly, but the film was banned this week from movie screens in the Bahamas. You have a group of people who are telling grown men and women what they can and cannot watch, Island Theater owner Philip Burroughs told the Associated Press. I cannot understand denying people the right to make their own choices, he said. Theaters in the capital city of Nassau had already begun to advertise the movie when the government's Plays and Films Control Board announced its ban at the urging of the Bahamas Christian Council.
But global retail giant Walmart has been selling the newly released DVD of the film, despite vocal protests by some U.S. religious right groups. In a statement on its website, the Mississippi-based American Family Association urged concerned Christians to visit their local Walmart locations and share their displeasure over the chain's decision to promote and carry the pro-homosexual movie. But Walmart spokesperson Gail Lavielle told the Reuters news agency, "We're a retailer. We want to sell things our customers will buy." According to Universal Studios Home Entertainment, Brokeback Mountain sold more than 1.4 million DVD copies on its first day of release earlier this month.
And finally, citing policies against controversial issues or religious advertising, U.S. TV networks CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox have each decided not to broadcast an ad for the United Church of Christ that promotes inclusivity. It shows an African-American single mother, a gay couple, an Arab-American, and others being ejected from their pews by a giant supernatural hand pressing a big red button. Text on the screen then reads, God doesn't reject people, neither do we. As an announcer says, the United Church of Christ, no matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you're welcome here. This is the second time a UCC TV spot has been nixed by the major networks. The first, rejected in December 2004, depicted bouncers preventing lesbian gay couples, people from ethnic minorities, and others from entering a church with the same tagline. It was named the year's most outstanding electronic advertisement by GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. The new ejector ad is running this month on at least 17 broadcast and cable networks, including A&E, AMC, BET, CNN, CNN en Español, Headline News, the Hallmark and History channels, TBS, TNT, E!, Lifetime, CTV, Azteca America, and you'd think on Logo, the Viacom MTV network's owned U.S. cable channel specifically targeting GLBT viewers, right? Guess again. When asked for an official reason why the country's first full-time queer cable outlet won't show the spot, an MTV network spokesperson responded, "Our guidelines state we will not accept religious advertisements that may be deemed as disparaging to another religion." On the contrary, says Ron Buford, director of the UCC's Still Speaking initiative, he says the campaign was created by the 1.3 million member denomination to encourage church attendance and counter the alienation some people feel from organized religion. Ironically, Buford was honored in November by the Logo Network and Out Magazine as one of the top 100 most interesting, influential, and newsworthy LGBT individuals. "I guess the idea of gay TV doesn't really mean it's your community's network," Buford told United Church News. "It's just something that's targeted at you to sell product."
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 8th, 2006. Written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
He was a human rights advocate long before the job had a title, all the while documenting his supersized sexual escapades. The story of controversial gay Irish patriot Sir Roger Casement continues later in the program. Stories about attacks on GLBT people around the world are sadly routine. This week alone, a mob at the University of West Indies campus in Jamaica chased down and hurled rocks at a man perceived to be gay. Police believe only their intervention saved his life. A senior news producer for the U.S. CBS TV network and a colleague were beaten this week with a wheel wrench or metal pipe on the Caribbean island of San Martin by four men and two women who reportedly called themselves gay bashers. And the men most responsible for last year's brutal beating of two gay men in Santa Fe, New Mexico, got what amounted to a preliminary slap on the wrist this week from a state district judge. As Jim Williams of KUNM-FM reports, while New Mexico passed a hate crime statute in 2003, some of the young men involved in the attack may not see any prison time at all.
In February 2005, 21-year-old James Maestas was pounded to within minutes of death after he and a friend, Joshua Stockham, were followed to their motel by six young Santa Fe men. Some of the six talked about beating up Maestas and Stockham because they're gay. The defendants, Jonathan Valdez, Paul Montoya, Isaiah Medina, Gabriel Maturin, Joseph Cano, and David Trinidad, all between 17 and 21 years old, chose to take part in what District Judge Michael Vigil agreed was a hate crime. Trinidad, Maturin, and Medina pummeled Maestas and left him choking on his own blood in a Santa Fe La Quinta Inn. Valdez, Montoya, and Cano did nothing to stop it. They all pleaded guilty.
"Nobody can prepare you for seeing somebody that you love so dearly in the condition that we found my son that early morning."
State District Court Judge Michael V. Hill listened to 4 hours of testimony in the sentencing hearing, some of the most compelling from James Maestas's mother, Jerry, who described seeing her son in a coma. She turned to the six suspects seated with their lawyers around a rectangular table next to her.
"That evening, you all decided to get into that vehicle and chase these young men down. There were those of you who chose to beat him. There were those of you who chose to stand by and do nothing, not even make a phone call. You left my son bleeding, unconscious, left him for dead. Those were the choices you made that evening. And with choices come consequences."
The six young men glanced at her occasionally but showed little emotion. James Maestas stood next to his mother as she spoke, his hand on her back, his eyes focused straight ahead, then took his turn.
Watching friends and family go through the hardships and seeing the trauma that I went through, it was hard to go through. I will never, ever forget this. Having someone hate your lifestyle, that they would physically beat you, it's hard to accept. Your Honor, I wish more than anything else that no one else would have to go through the suffer that I went through.
Cheryl Stockham's son, Joshua, was also beaten in the attack. She shook as she spoke to the six young men seated beside her.
One thing I do want you to hear, and make sure you all hear this, gay people do not choose to be gay. You may have children in the future, and you may have a child that turns out to be gay. What will your reaction be at that time? Even more so, what will the reaction be of people like you who hate gays? What will their reaction be toward your children? I want you to keep that in mind, all of you, because they did not choose to be gay. Who would choose to have a life where people hate you? Your Honor, I urge you to impose stiff consequences for these defendants. This was a hate crime, not only against gays, but against humanity of all kind.
Vigil also heard from family members of the defendants who pleaded for him not to impose jail sentences. Some of them said alcohol and the so-called pack mentality of boys were partially to blame. Some said the attack wasn't characteristic of the young men. And the defendants spoke as well, each offering apologies to Maestas and Stockham. David Trinidad was 17 at the time of the attack and already on probation for raping a 4-year-old child. He'll now be held in juvenile custody until he's 21.
I'm ashamed that I beat up. We got two guys that were weaker than us, and we beat on them. Just hope that everything will go good for me, hoping that I could get to that treatment center. You know, I want to get the help I need.
Vigil saying, quote, "I'm not ready to throw you away," sentenced Trinidad to 5 years probation after his juvenile custody ends. Valdez, Montoya, and Cano each got a 3-year probation and were directed to complete a program on tolerance and 500 hours of community service, some of that sharing what they've learned with other young people. Before sentencing, Isaiah Medina's neighbor, Carla C. DeBaca, spoke on his behalf.
We're not saying that he should get away scot-free because that would not be right, but I also don't feel that he should go to prison. If he serves 6 years in prison, 7 years in prison, he's going to land up having to learn how to be someone he's not, and I don't know how he will make it through that.
Along with Trinidad, Maturin and Medina were most involved in the beating and were charged with aggravated battery causing great bodily harm. But though Vigil said what they did troubled him the most, the judge would say only that Maturin and Medina should see the inside of a penitentiary as a look at how things could be. He gave them 60 days to do that in a diagnostic evaluation at the correctional facility in Los Lunas. They'll then be back in Vigil's courtroom for a final sentencing. The state had sought full penalties of 7.5 years in prison for the three, including the 1-year hate crime enhancement. In sentencing the six, Judge Michael Vigil said the homophobic attacks show Santa Fe isn't the community it's thought to be, adding that its reputation as a tolerant place is, in his words, a myth.
This was the first case prosecuted in New Mexico under the hate crime statute.
Ann Badway is co-counsel for the Attorney General's office, which helped prosecute the case. She points to the fact that each defendant will now have on his record a guilty plea to a hate crime, and that the hate crime enhancer gave Judge Vigil the chance to emphasize the prejudice behind the crime. She says Vigil would have to answer questions about his choices on prison time, and adds that she feels the prosecution team did as much as it could in getting probation sentences for Valdez and Montoya.
In general, when a plea offer is structured, what has to be taken into consideration is what evidence does the state have to secure a conviction beyond a reasonable doubt? The state, my co-counsel Sherry Weinstein and I believe that they were appropriate charges given the evidence that we thought we could prove at trial.
Badway will be back before Judge Michael Vigil when Maturin and Medina return for final sentencing in 60 days. For This Way Out, I'm Jim Williams in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Hi, this is Georgina Beyer. I'm an MP in the New Zealand Parliament, the world's first transsexual to have been elected to such a position. You're listening to This Way Out. Stay out and proud.
Last time on This Way Out, we began the story of early 20th century gay humanitarian and controversial Irish patriot Sir Roger Casement. The first part of the dramatized biography by producer Hugh Young and narrator Barry Empson described Casement's roots in both Irish Catholic and Protestant households and how family, friends, and associates portrayed him to be an exceptionally charming and adventurous young man. Hopping a ship to Africa, Casement would eventually work for the British Foreign Office, winning acclaim for exposing the brutality of King Leopold's rubber trading operation in what was then the Belgian Congo. And his story continues.
No signal answers from the shore, Sir Roger sadly said.
We present The Broken Heart of Ireland, The Life and Death of Sir Roger Casement, Part 2. The Devil's Paradise.
But I must still my duty, and at once I mean to land. So in a small boat pulled ashore on the lonely Bannerstrand.
Last time, we told you how Roger Casement was instrumental in saving the Congolese from the tyranny of the rubber traders in Leopold II's so-called Congo Free State. In his spare time, he was picking up tricks in beats from Kinshasa to Madeira. He recorded them, their dimensions, for he was what we had called today a shameless size queen, and other interesting details, in his black-covered diaries. The Foreign Office then sent him to South America. In 1908, he sailed to Para, now known as Belém, a damp, unhealthy town on the mouth of the Amazon. But a year later, he was promoted to Consul General in Rio. It's there that the only external record that Casement might be homosexual was made. A father, told that his good-looking son was to have lunch with Casement, was overheard to say with a smile, "Be careful." Casement must not only have been stunningly discreet, he must have been stunningly lucky, because his diary for the same period has notes like,
"The young, thin, dark gentleman of Ickersby, eyed constantly and wanted, would have gone, but Gabriel waiting, in very deep thrusts, lovely, young, 18 and glorious, biggest since Lisbon, perfectly huge."
Many Irish patriots believe the diaries were forged.
"They tried to foul your memory as they burnt your corpse with lime, but God is not an Englishman, and truth will tell in time."
No gay man today would doubt for a moment that a gay man had written them. And they cover some 3 years, interleaved with all of Casement's other experiences. It would have taken years to forge them. He wrote poetry, much of it about love, the love object, unspecified.
"Love took me by the heart at birth, and wrought out from its common earth, with soul at his own skill aghast, a furnace my own breath should blast. Why this was done I cannot tell, the mystery is inscrutable. I only know I pay the cost, with heart and soul and honour lost. I only know 'tis death to give my love, yet loveless can I live? I only know I cannot die and leave this love God made, not I."
He returned to Belfast in May after a chance encounter with John McGonagall.
"Awfully keen. X, 4 and 6p."
X being a private code, but the entry X in deep thrusts gives us some clue. And in Belfast the same day, he met an old love, Miller, and took him to an hotel.
"Turned in together, not a word said till, wait, I'll untie it, and then, grand. First time after so many years, and so deep mutual longing. Huge, told of many, grand."
He also found time to go to Offenbach's Tales of Hoffman in London. He found the Baccarol heavenly. But life for the rubber workers in the upper Amazon was hellish. And a newspaper called Truth headlined a story about it, The Devil's Paradise. The villains this time were landowner Julio Cesar Arana and one of his henchmen, Armando Normand, on a tributary of the Amazon called the Putumayo on the border between Brazil and Peru.
This time, the Amazonian Indians were flogged, tortured, and shot if they failed to bring in the rubber. On one occasion, Normand is said to have lined three men up and shot them with one bullet. On another, he ordered a man killed by smashing his testicles. Casement described him as a loathsome monster, and in 1911, he reported back to the Foreign Office. His report was so strong that a mere threat to publish it was felt sufficient to force the Peruvian government to make reforms, though it didn't work out that way. And for his work, Casement was knighted. He accepted the honour, though he felt a traitor to Ireland, and it was to Ireland that he devoted more and more of his energy. So far, he'd involved himself in the promotion of the Gaelic language, but more and more in the Home Rule movement. Born of Catholics in Dublin, but raised by Protestants in Ulster, Casement was well placed to promote Irish independence in both the North and the South. There was an Irish party, but its view was a narrow one of power in Westminster. Instead, he followed the lead of a Dublin journalist, Arthur Griffith, who'd founded an Irish separatist party, whose name is still powerful in Ireland today, Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin means ourselves, often translated ourselves alone. The Unionist Party, Northern, Protestant, anti-Home Rule but still pro-Irish, was led by Englishmen. Enter our next villain, one of those Englishmen, F.E. Smith. And an added complication was Northern Irish support for the Kaiser's Germany, going back to German-born King William of Orange. Casement believed that the Home Rule Bill then being toyed with by Parliament was just an attempt to secure Ireland against the Germans, not a real attempt to grant self-government. A united and free Ireland became an obsession to him, and it was about this time, 1913, that people's opinions of Casement began to be a little less ecstatic. To one young nationalist, he gave an impression of instability and restlessness, and the wife of an English supporter thought him crazed. And next week, we'll tell you about Casement and Ireland.
So in a small boat pulled ashore on the lonely Banner Strand.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Lucia Chappelle, Rex Wagner, Graham Underhill, Jim Williams, and Hugh Young and Barry Empson contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link on our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history, music, and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KXCI Tucson, Arizona, CKDU Halifax, Nova Scotia, WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.